is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Fall in love with basketball again this February with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Be sure to check out their new Dr. Dish facility model with advanced analytics. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pat Baldwin, head men's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads mentorship program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. On this NBA trade deadline episode, we have split it into two parts. In part one, you'll hear my conversation with Coach David Thorpe about the James Harden Ben Simmons trade, in addition to getting his thoughts about the Cleveland Cavaliers and Evan Mobley. That is part of a larger conversation that will air as its own episode with Coach Thorpe that will go up this coming Monday. So please make sure you check out that episode when it goes live. And then in part two, Jason jumps back on with me and he and I go through all of the trades that occurred on Thursday. Here's part one with Coach David Thorpe from True Hoop. Let's start with obviously the biggest topic, and then I want to talk a little Cavs too, since I'm here in Cleveland.
Sure.
Let's start with the Harden Simmons trade. I'm going to throw two things at you, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, and then I'll let you agree, disagree with me, tell me where the nuances are with what I'm about to say. So Philly gets Harden, and now he's basically tanked his way out of two straight teams. So you bring him in, how happy is he going to be? How well does he fit with Embiid? And then you take into account when the biggest moments in the playoffs, you can make a pretty good argument that he hasn't been at his best in the biggest moments when his team has needed him. So that's my devil's advocate against Harden going to Philly. And then on the Simmons side of it, and I'm curious to hear from you on this one, with Simmons, the last time we saw him, he's shooting 32% from the line in the playoffs, which is clearly a case of not necessarily his fundamental skill, but that's something going on mentally, like a golfer that has the yips. And I think that's very difficult. I went through something like that in college with free throw shooting, and it took me a little bit of time to get over it. I was shooting like 90% as a sophomore, and I went one for my last 10 as a sophomore, and then I eventually got it up. As a junior, I shot 76%, and then as a senior, I shot 82%, but I was a better free throw shooter in high school before that happened to me. But I overcame it. But I wonder, you know, everybody's kind of penciling Simmons in as he's just going to come on in and be, you know, once he gets back in shape, that he's going to be the Ben Simmons when he was at his best. And I wonder if, you know, the mental side of it, and not the mental health side of it, but just the being able to get up to the free throw line. And look, he doesn't have to shoot 90%, but he's got to be able to make 65, 70%, or else teams are just going to start hammering him. So just curious what your take is on those two things, and then kind of how you feel like it's going to play out.
So I published a big article about this yesterday, right after. I actually have two different pieces this week at TrueHoop.com.
I got it right in front of me. I read them both.
Oh, great. So the one on Embiid and Simmons, on Simmons and Harden. So in the case of Philadelphia, I mean, James Harden at any point is better than no Ben Simmons.
Right. Absolutely.
We could argue, I argued back in the fall, they should go after Derek White and DeJounte Murray from the Spurs. I feel very good right now that had they done that, they'd be better off in the next 5 years than having James Harden right now. DeJounte Murray's an all-star, and he's 25. Derek White just went to Boston. Both are close to being elite-level players. Derek White's top 5% in the league in defense. DeJounte Murray suddenly has become top 10% on offense after having been top 10% on defense in the past. And again, just 25 years old. So I think Daryl should have done that. But Harden's better than nothing. I think Harden knows. Zach Lowe, my buddy, who does his own pod, obviously, at ESPN, he talked about it this morning that Harden's on alert now. Like, you yep. can't do this anymore. And that matters. Like, James knows he can't suddenly complain about Joel Embiid. No one's going to listen to the boy cried wolf. He'll be done. So he's going to have to play. I think he'll fit in just fine with Joel Embiid. The world's best players always find a way to fit in. I gave this example. To Henry Abbott, my partner Troop, yesterday. Did you happen to watch, Mike, the Beatles documentary, Get Back?
I heard the Simmons podcast, but I have not watched it yet.
So in the second one, there's a famous jazz keyboard player that's often called the Fifth Beatle. And he's called that because initially he came to London. They had been playing in Hamburg, Germany when they were a young band, and he had been playing for a different band in Hamburg, Germany in the early 60s. And they knew him. And so he came by and they just said, hey, do you mind, you know, sitting in on some of these things that we did? Well, meanwhile, it's on camera. We watched it and we listened to it. And they were incredible. You would have thought he'd been with the Beatles for years. And my point is, at the highest level, these brilliant basketball players are just like these brilliant musicians. In just the blink of an eye, they figure it out. So we don't have any concerns about how Joel Embiid and James Harden can figure it out. It's like getting two mathematicians in a room to solve an equation. I promise you, they will solve it. Okay? That won't be the issue. The issue is James Harden, as we age as players, we can't do the same thing nearly as frequently as we once could. So Kobe Bryant had, whatever, 60. I watched his last game. But he wasn't doing that every game. It's not possible as you get older. You have moments. It's no different than aging as a human being. There are times my dad, while he was dying in his last year, there were days where he actually felt pretty good. But when he was 50, he had most days where he was feeling pretty good. When he was 30, every day felt pretty good. It's the same thing with professional athletes at the highest level. So we're going to see Harden be amazing less than we used to. Might it be enough to win a championship? Sure. Joel Embiid is one of the two best players in the world, one of the three best. Giannis and Jokic might be better. It's you know, splitting hairs. They're all the same. They're all beyond great. So, and LeBron's still pretty damn good. So I think that they'll be very good. I have them third or fourth best in the league by season's end as they kind of work some things defensively out, which is where I think they'll be more challenged. The Ben Simmons thing, I think you make a great point. Just because he's out of Philly doesn't mean he'll make free throws. Now, he shot better from the line than he did in the postseason, but I think you're right. I think that there's real concerns there. I heard someone say today that he won't even come back until Durant is back because he wants that cover. Wow. He doesn't want to come in. I mean, if they come back to a home game, there'll be no Durant and no Irving until after the All-Star break. And that might be something he can't handle. We don't know. We don't know if it's all a ruse to get out of Philly. He clearly has some mental issues. There's no doubt of that. But we don't know how severe they were. We're going to find out. And so, no, I think that long-term, Brooklyn won this trade, short-term, Philly won it. And that could work to each advantage over time. It's possible that both are true. One team is better in the short-term, one team is better in the long-term.
Yeah, the best version of Simmons clearly fits really well with with Kyrie and
I think so.
With Durant. I mean, it's just, you know, you look at what he can bring, what he could bring to the floor defensively, and again, just as a distributor. And Kyrie and Durant, obviously, the shooting that the two of those guys bring is just is incredible. All right, talk some Cavs with me.
Sure.
So clearly, nobody really saw this coming, at least in terms of the success that they've had, wins and losses wise. I think there were a lot of people that obviously liked Evan Mobley. People thought that Garland was going to be able to take a leap and that he was going to continue to improve. And then Jared Allen, you get him as a throw-in from the last Harden trade. And hard to believe that Houston didn't want this guy. And they've just – all those guys have developed at a much faster pace than clearly anybody thought. And so now you have this team that's sitting a game and a half out in the Eastern Conference, and they go out and get Caris LeVert. So what's your thoughts on how LeVert fits? I know that I think you like that particular fit for the Cavs, and he certainly brings something that they didn't have, his ability to put the ball on the floor and create offense, where previously they only had basically Garland is the only guy who's got any kind of creativity, especially in the half court. But just defensively, this team is so good. So how do you see LeVert fitting in, and what do you think what's the ceiling for the Cavs if things go perfectly for them? What's their ceiling?
Well, we know, I just was reading a study about this recently. We know the placebo effect is a real thing, and there's so much evidence of it in the medical profession. If you believe something, you can make it be the case whether it should be or not. And I think Cavaliers players believe Caris LeVert is going to be a big key for them going forward. What he does offensively, his ability to generate points on his own as a playmaker, not just a scorer. He should be able to, you know, there's such an elite defensive team, the best defensive team in the league right now. Mobley's a big part of that. So is Jared Allen.
Yep.
And LeVert definitely is not a defender, but can be when you're playing for, in their minds, a number one seed. So he'll compete his butt off, and he does have to carry the load offensively. They got, you know, Darius and the system itself for that. And they got Kevin Love off the bench helping, and he's an incredible player in his own right and has been for a long time. So I think they believe, and that's big. You got to believe. Now, belief only gets you so far when you run into another team that believes too, and they're better than you. And so what my fear is that they're going to be a three seed, and they're going to have to play the Raptors at a six seed. And I think Toronto's going to beat them if that's the case. Now, we're a long way to go from there, okay? Toronto could go higher than that. They're on an eight-game win streak, and they're playing great. And Siakam is playing – he deserves an All-NBA. It's a joke that he's not an All-Star. Joke. That LaMelo
he's
got
been,
it over him.
He's been incredible since he came back. I mean, he's been unbelievable.
Oh, my God. So I think when you ask me about ceiling, I think their ceiling this year is to win a series. And that's no knock on them. The East is just loaded. Loaded. When you think about Brooklyn might be the eighth seed.
Yeah.
They might be the eighth seed. So how about that? Cleveland clinches the first seed, and then they got to play that team with Ben Simmons and Kyrie. Yep. And the first two games, Kyrie plays. It's in Cleveland. So I think a series is – I just am a big believer that you got to have pain before you win a lot. I think you have to go through a lot of frustration and pain. And Cleveland as a city has done that, as a franchise has done that, but not in the postseason with these guys. So – I think that if they can win a series, incredible. If they can finish top four in the East, incredible. And I wrote an article about them last month called "Hello Cleveland" from the old what was that movie? The funny movie about the band that the fake rock and roll band, the mockumentary.
Oh gosh,
Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello
thank
Cleveland.
You.
So I named it that. They're going to be contending for championships for a while. I just love Mobley so much. I love Jared Allen. I love Darius Garland. I think Isaac Okoro can be a workable glue guy for them if he'll buy into that. I think Colin Sexton, we did our show today, our podcast called Bring It In. Our show today, we talk about I think Sexton should agree to be a sixth man for them. And I think that'd be a dynamic play for him and for them. Otherwise, they have to solve that problem. How do we generate big time scoring on our bench unit? Not easy to do. Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford kind of guy, Bobby Jackson from back in the day with the Kings.
Yep.
I'd love him to do that. I don't know if he's willing to do it. He's a young player, and he may feel like he should be the Darius Garland for some other team. I don't agree with him. I think he should be a sixth man for that team. But no matter what, they have a core in place that you guys should be very excited. You should be great for years to come.
what's Mobley's ceiling? How good can he be? Could he be a top five player in the league? I mean, obviously what he's doing defensively this year is unprecedented for a guy who's a rookie big man.
I thought Jaren Jackson Jr. was the best prospect in the same draft with Luka. And I thought he could be Tim Duncan 2.0. I'm not wrong. He's coming around now. He's starting to show it. And look how good Memphis is.
Absolutely.
But Evan Mobley is Tim Duncan 2.0. He's not really the shooter from three that that needs to be. To be the 2.0 version, you got to play in the perimeter more defensively, which, you know, we do now more in the league. And you got to be able to make outside shots. Mobley is better on the first than, you know, he's not yet a shooter. But I think he's going to be. So I think he's going to be a Tim Duncan-like player. He's going to be up for defensive player of the year, all NBA, and he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's what I think.
I've never seen a guy get to spots on the floor on both ends who appears to be moving in, I don't want to say slow motion, but he just, all of a sudden he's there and it never looks like he's sprinting. It never looks like he's moving fast, but it's just all of a sudden he is there and he just swallows guys up at the rim. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, just for all the coaches out there, I was working with an NBA starter earlier this winter, a center, a big athletic, very talented center, really quick and fast and jumpy. And I spent an hour showing him Jokic tape. And I showed him, and he was laughing his ass off at Jokic. And I would he'd run a pick and roll at the top of the key with Jamal Murray or someone. And then I would do like a do-do-do-do-do-do because he was kind of stroll to the rim and the ball would come right to his hands off a rebound or off a pass and he would lay it up or dunk it, whatever. And everything was just like do-do-do-do-do and he was always where he's supposed to be. And my point I was making to him is you don't always have to rush. That's the feel. That's the art. And you're exactly right. Mobley and Scotty Barnes have that gift of just the game has a feel. There are some players who don't have a great feel but can be great players. Their craft is great. Their athleticism is great. Their discipline is great. They don't get themselves in trouble, all that. But the guys where the game just makes sense, they have to work on their game. Just like a musician may have a talent, an ear for music, but they still got to work on their craft or they just will have a talent that isn't developed. So Mobley has that feel like Jokic where he just – the game makes sense to him, and it's like I said, he and Scottie Barnes I could watch all day because they just the game just is in their bones.
That wraps up part one of our NBA trade deadline episode. Thanks to Coach David Thorpe for sharing his thoughts on the Harden-Simmons trade and the Cleveland Cavaliers. You will now hear Jason and I jump on together to talk about all the trades that took place Thursday. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Clinsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. It is
what time is it?
1:05
a.m. Listen, you gotta watch the Boba Fett, man. You gotta watch the Boba Fett.
I think I was dozing off during it. I can't get into it. But
it's over, right? Did you watch the last episode? Are you caught up or are you behind still?
Dude, I haven't watched any of it. I mean, the kids are watching it and I was sleeping. So
was Baby Yoda in the episode, Mike?
Baby Yoda was there. I saw R2-D2.
Okay. So it was the last episode then.
And some weird guy with things coming out of his neck and red eyes.
Oh, yeah. That's Cad Bane, man. Look out.
Nice. Anyway, so it is currently 1 a.m. We are
that's
now
not what we're here to talk about.
36 hours after a crazy trade deadline, although maybe not as crazy as it seems, since there was a lot of talk that some of the things that did go down were going to go down. So let's start with the big one and the one that was speculated upon for
the big one,
weeks
right?
In advance. Yeah.
Dale Tice for Dennis Schroeder, Bruno Fernando, and Enes Freedom.
I was thinking Bol Bol and PJ Dozier to the Magic, but, you know, we can start wherever you want.
No. Obviously, the big trade, and I'm just going to lay it all out. The Sixers acquire James Harden, Paul Millsap, Ben Simmons, and then for the Nets acquired Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, the Sixers' first-round pick unprotected, the Sixers' 2027 first-round pick, top eight protected. The Nets reportedly have the option to defer the 2022 first-round pick to 2023. I know there's a lot of people that are happy about this trade. I know there's a lot of jokes that occurred on the NBA show. But, Mike, I think my favorite joke – I'm going to keep this as PG as I possibly can, a local joint in Philadelphia called Sin City Philly. So you could guess what that refers to. Welcomes James Harden to Philly with open arms and legs. And we're just going to leave it at that, Mike. James Harden, congratulations. Philadelphia's already starting promos. They're going to make benefit off of you right there.
Let's leave it there.
So, listen, this is a joke. This is an absolute joke. I'm excited for the prospect that this might mean that the Cavs have a better chance at being a top two or three seed because we know that James Harden is as reliable as my dad's 2003 Dodge Durango that he's still driving around. Okay. There's rust on it. Although, as Chuck says, now he's been traded, he's healthy, so he's going to start to play. He's going to rub some Bengay on it. Although, I heard that Icy Hot. Oh, yeah, Icy Hot. Sorry, it's not Bengay.
Don't stick it to Shaq, man. Don't stick it to Shaq like that.
He's got the Icy Hot. And the bottom line is this, Mike. I think this makes the Sixers worse, which is weird, bizarre to say. You know, because I just don't know how the offense works with him as opposed to Seth Curry. And I know Ben Simmons was a nothing, and I know Andre Drummond, I mean, he was an oak. He played all right this year. But I just don't know if Embiid and Harden will work. I know the theoretical, once again with that theoretical, although my students told me that I should stop saying theoretical so much and we should start calling it hypothetical. But I said, well, I like to say theoretical.
Theoretical is a lot more fun.
Theoretical is more fun, especially because we like to talk about Rodney Hood, who ironically got traded as well. Anyways, James Harden, I just don't see the Sixers, you know, benefiting. And once again, on the other side of the coin, the Nets, I mean, they're going to have games that they're not going to have any of the three star playing in the next 2 weeks because Durant's out and they're saying he's out for an extended period of time. You got Kyrie who can't play at home. And then you got Ben Simmons who has to ramp up to play. Although, did you see the tweet, Mike? The tweet that the Nets now have two players who don't take shots when they need to. I thought that was a good tweet.
I didn't see that, but that's a good one.
I saw that tweet. So, like, they're going to have games where their big three aren't even playing. So, I mean, I don't know about this, Mike. I don't know. Your initial takeaways, other than that it's a clown show, because I know that's what you sent me.
Yes. So, I guess, I don't know, which one do you want me to address first? Which side of this trade do you want me to address first?
Start with the Sixers page, because that's where I started.
Okay, so my take for the Philadelphia 76ers is, one, that you're bringing in James Harden, who clearly is an upgrade over the Ben Simmons slot right now, which is giving you nothing, right? So no matter what version of Harden you get, you're getting more from that salary spot, that roster spot, than you were getting from Simmons. So that's number one. If you're Philly, you could say, hey, we're upgrading that slot from nothing to James Harden, regardless of which version of James Harden you're getting. Now you lose Seth Curry in the deal, but Harden over an empty roster spot and Seth Curry, you have to say, is an upgrade. So that's number one. On the other hand, I think when you look at James Harden, he has now basically tanked his way out of two different cities, two different teams in less than 12 months. So it seems like, I'm going to use a word here, it seems like he may be a bit fickle about the situation that he's in. Now, granted, he has some type of special relationship, obviously, with Daryl Morey, who did whatever he could to get Harden to Philadelphia, held out when many people said he wouldn't be able to get this level of player. So if anybody knows how to get the best out of James Harden, right, it's Daryl Morey, who was with him for 10 years through his peak. That being said, and this is what I said to you, and this is why I immediately texted that this trade was a clown show on both ends, because I just don't – James Harden, as a playoff performer, history will tell you that he hasn't been great in the playoffs. He doesn't have a signature playoff moment. He hasn't come up big in the biggest moments. And then conversely, you look at the guy who's already there in Philadelphia and you think about Joel Embiid's history in the playoffs. And has he had stomach flu? Has he had dominant games? Sure. In that Toronto series that they lose on the Kawhi shot, they were, if you remember, plus 100 with Embiid on the floor in the minutes that he played, and they were almost equally as bad in the one-fifth as many minutes that he sat. So clearly Embiid can perform well, but yet it feels like he's a nagging injury away. He's a sitting out this game because of a sickness. He's not the most reliable superstar. And so now you combine those two guys. I just don't see where that's an NBA championship caliber team. I just don't. I don't think that the two of them together, it's not that they can't play together necessarily in terms of their playing style. There's obviously some things that they have to work out. But I think that piece of it, they can probably figure out. But I just don't know if I'm Philadelphia, is Harden with his past pedigree in the playoffs, with his tanking when the situation doesn't meet his expectations, with the fact that he hasn't been in great shape this year, with the fact that he's 33 years old and clearly is not as good as he was. And maybe it's just because he's not in shape. Who knows? Maybe it's a little bit because of adapting to the rule changes. I don't know what the reasons are, but it's been proven that a guy who doesn't do a great job of taking care of his body and a guy who...
Oh, come on. Wait, Mike. You're saying that James Harden is not a physical specimen?
Well, when he had the fat suit on in Houston or whatever he was doing there, and now he's here this year. And if you look at him when he was at his peak in Houston, right? And you look at the way he looks now, he doesn't look like the same guy.
Mike, so this is some James Harden slander you're spitting at.
We don't have a LeBron level of commitment to conditioning and to getting himself in the best possible frame of mind and body to be able to play. So I'm going to read a tweet that came from Michael Grange that was quoted in a Ringer article. And it sort of sums up not just what I'm saying, which is I think the fit for the Philadelphia 76ers this year, but it says, as long as Harden stays healthy, gets fit, meshes well with his MVP caliber ball dominant teammate, tries a little bit on defense, commits to that 5-year, $275 million contract, and doesn't freeze up at critical moments in the playoffs, the Sixers will come out fine on this trade. So if you want to sum up all the things that could potentially go wrong, like all I addressed was what I think are his deficiencies as far as trying to get Philadelphia to win an NBA title this year. That doesn't address the fact that Harden opted into his $47.5 million option for next season. And then...
Well, that was... Wait. I want to stop you there. Okay. That was a rumor, but I'm hearing that that's not true. He did not yet opt into it.
Okay. So if things don't go well, then he still has the option to walk at the end of the year. So good luck with that, Philly. But if he doesn't, let's say he opts in and then he has the opportunity to sign a 5-year max. So you're looking at this season plus 6 more years of James Harden, where in the last year of that 5-year contract, I think if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be paid like $62 million when he's 37 years old or 38 years old. I'm not sure that 38-year-old James Harden is going to be worth $62 million a year. Let's put it this way. So I think Philly has set themselves up for both short-term disappointment and long-term disappointment. I guess you can say, like I mentioned off the top, that they turned what was a zero into whatever version of James Harden that you're getting. So look, is that an upgrade? Sure it is. But I don't know about you, but I didn't think Philly was winning the title before they acquired James Harden. And I certainly don't think that just by getting Harden that now Philly has suddenly vaulted into a team that I'm looking at and go, oh, that team that team's going to win the NBA title. I just don't see it. Harden has no track record of performing well in the playoffs in the biggest moments. He has none. I mean, I defy you to find me a time when he's the man and he plays well in critical moments and critical games. It's just there. It's not out there. And then, like I said, Embiid, fantastic player, unbelievable talent. When he's there and engaged and playing, there's probably, I mean, he's right there. He's right there, 1, 2, 3, 4 in the world as the best player. But history with him says he's going to get a nagging injury. He's going to come up with an illness. He's going to maybe not be in the best shape. So in a critical fourth quarter, he's not where you need him to be. Has he improved all those things this year? It seems like it, but I still don't know when playoff minutes ramp up where you want your best guys out on the floor for 42 to 45 minutes a game. Are you going to be able to get that out of Embiid for 4 straight 7-game series and then combine that with Harden? I don't see it for Philadelphia. And look, it's an upgrade over what they had before, which was nothing. But to me, if I'm acquiring James Harden in a trade, I've lost the trade. That's how I'll leave it.
I do not disagree, my friend. I do not disagree. All right, so let's take it from the Nets' perspective. What do you think about from the Nets' perspective, Mike?
Why don't you get, what's your take on it for the Nets? What do you think?
I think the Nets won the trade, Mike. Because they got a lot for a guy who didn't want to be there. I mean, when you think about it, do you know who won the trade, Mike? The Cleveland Cavaliers. That's who won the trade.
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Milwaukee Bucks. They won the trade too, because now that they're two less teams you have to worry about. Quite frankly, I mean, we can't completely discount them, but I kind of want to, Mike.
I think the thing is here's the thing, Jay, right? Is that there's clearly an upside to both of these situations, right? Maybe all the things that were said in that tweet, right? Harden's healthy, he gets fit, him and Embiid mesh together on the floor, and that makes sense. And Harden commits to playing a little defense because he thinks he can win the title, and he gets back to close peak James Harden, Embiid stays healthy. Is there a possible path where all those things could happen and Harden could have finally have his playoff moment? Is that possible? Right? It's possible, right?
I don't think it's likely.
It's possible, but I personally don't think that's what's going to happen. And then conversely, on the Brooklyn side, I think you lay out in a perfect world. If you're getting the best version of Ben Simmons, let's say you get the Ben Simmons of the stretches when Embiid was out, not last season, but the 2 seasons prior, there were times when Embiid was out and Simmons just kind of took over and the team went up and down the floor and Simmons is attacking downhill and he's playing all NBA level defense. If you get that guy and you put him next to Kyrie during home games, keep in mind, and Durant coming off a pretty serious knee injury, if all those things mesh together and you're getting the best version of Ben Simmons, it's a pretty good fit. I could make an argument that it might even be a better fit than Harden because of what Simmons potentially brings on the defense of the floor. And yet, I think what is being completely downplayed in every single thing that I look at, every single trade grade, no matter what site you look at, almost nothing is mentioned about the fact that Ben Simmons had, forget about the mental issues off the floor or whatever. The fact is that the guy had the yips and he was afraid to go to the free throw line. And when he did go to the free throw line, he shot 32% in the playoffs last year. And he famously had the pass that he dumps off to Thibault against the Hawks because he didn't want to shoot and he didn't want to get fouled. And I'm telling you, that doesn't just go away, especially when you haven't played real basketball to be able to figure out how do I fight through that. It's one thing to fight through it in a pickup game at your local LA Fitness. It's one thing to fight through that in a practice where nobody's really watching. But when the lights are on and you got to go out there and you got to step up to the free throw line, it changes the way you play. And I think back to Antoine Walker when he was with the Celtics, started having that same thing at the foul line and completely changed the way he plays. Simmons, if he's not going to go to the basket hard, then what is he offensively? Because he's not going to shoot outside. I mean, even when he was right mentally, he wouldn't take an outside shot. Now, he's still not going to start shooting the ball from the outside, you wouldn't think. And he's a guy who may still be afraid, hesitant to go to the line. And then if he can't step up there and at least shoot 60%, then teams are just going to follow him. Why would you want to go against Kyrie and Durant in the last 5 minutes of a game? You just hack Simmons and put him up there shooting 32%. And I haven't seen very many people talk about whether or not, forget about whether he's right mentally in terms of off the court and whatever issues that was taking place. But I just think the fact that he had the yips, it just doesn't go away. And I just don't think you're getting peak Ben Simmons, which is what we've talked about as we discussed him over the last year of if you're a team, would you want him? And is he worth taking a flyer on? Probably, but I think it's being severely underplayed whether or not he's going to be able to come back and be the best version of the Ben Simmons that we've already seen. I put the odds on that at like 15%. I think you're going to still see lingering effects of what happened to him last year on the floor. And look, he may never feel comfortable again at the free throw line. He might not. And that has to affect the way that he plays. And could he still be a valuable player with all the other things that he does? Yes, but I don't think you're getting the very, very best version of Ben Simmons, which is what every trade grade and analysis that I've seen has completely discounted the fact that it just seems like people think he's going to walk in whenever he's ready to play, whether that's in 2 weeks, whether that's in a month, whenever this ramp up period is done. People think he's just going to walk in and be as good as he was before. And I just don't think that's the case. And so as a result of that, I don't know what I'm getting from him. And clearly when you had the best version of Harden, the best version of Kyrie, the best version of Durant, which we saw for what, 16 games, that team looked pretty darn good offensively. And theoretically, Ben Simmons, or hypothetically, shout out to your students, Ben Simmons at his best, I think fits really, really well. I think the best version of Ben Simmons might be better suited for this team just in terms of making it a well-rounded team, even than the best version of James Harden. But I just don't think that that's what you're getting. And so you look at where Brooklyn is, and you talked about it, like Durant, when's he coming back? He's still 3 weeks out, a month out. Simmons, they're talking he's going to be a month. So now you're looking at like March 10th. Where that's still
a month. That's a month left in the season, right. Essentially.
Right. So you basically have what? There'll be 15 games left, A, for them to rebound because they're in a lot of trouble right now. What have they lost? 8, 9 in a row.
Well, they've lost. No. They lost tonight, Mike.
They lost 10 in a row. And
they were losing. 29-16. They are now 29-26.
So you got to figure that they're going to be either in the play-in or maybe they get into that sixth spot somewhere in there. So they're going to have to come from behind to get to where they want to go or where they think they can go. And you got the whole Kyrie, which is just a weird, bizarre situation. And who knows? I don't think that's going to get resolved in any way that's positive for the Nets. And there's just so much baggage that goes along with that. So I don't know. Again, you turned Harden, who didn't want to be there, into Simmons. But I'll say again, it's theoretical Simmons. And so I personally feel like this made both teams – I think it makes both teams not necessarily worse, but I don't think that these are winning mixes. I don't think these are championship mixes. I just think that these two teams have taken a chance, and the odds of either or both of those situations working out perfectly, where these teams become NBA championship teams, I don't know, 5%, 10% maybe. Whereas a lot of the analysis that I'm seeing seems to think that both of these were huge upgrades. And I just think there's so many question marks for both teams. And I don't know. I just don't think it's going to work out for either team. I think this is going to be a trade that you're going to look back on and go, nobody really won that thing. Both teams got what they deserved. Let's put it that way.
Well, for the Cavs' sake, I hope you're right. And I think we've hit all the key points on this. You know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, the Cavs play the Sixers tomorrow night, so we'll watch a little bit. Obviously, Harden is not playing, so you know, hopefully that means the Cavs can pull out another victory. They snapped the victory out of the jaws of defeat tonight because it looked bad for the Cavs tonight, Mike. I don't know if you caught any of that.
I mean, I just saw and followed it a little bit.
They gave up 47 points in the first quarter to the Pacers, who couldn't miss a shot. And then the Pacers scored 66 points the rest of the game.
Here's the thing with the Cavs, right, is they're continuing to win. And I know the Pacers aren't good. And at this point, the Pacers are actively trying to lose, not their players and coaching staff, but they clearly want to be and have a shot at the lottery. And so they're not competing to win as a franchise. The players obviously are. But the Cavs are without tonight. Garland's out. Markkanen's out. So you're without two starters.
Markkanen was, by the way, working out before the game. So he's close.
But again, didn't play tonight. And so you have a team with two starters out that just continues to somehow win. And I know they're not playing a murderer's row of teams lately, but the fact of the matter is that this team is, I think, a lot tougher than people think. And
one game back, Mike.
Yeah. And because of what they have defensively, they're just really hard to score on, and it's going to give them an opportunity in every game. And if LeVert, who was, by all accounts of what I've read and seen, was really good tonight, and if he can bring...
He was good in the second half, Mike. I don't want to...
Yeah, okay. But if he can bring what he's good at to this team, which is exactly what they missed, which we already talked about, but if he can provide them with the offensive punch and spark that they just didn't have really from anybody but Garland, it fills a hole on this team. And again, are the Cavs a championship team? I can make an argument that even if the Cavs get the one seed, who knows, Brooklyn might be the eight seed. It might be a Cavs-Brooklyn first-round series, which if you're the Cavs, you got to be like, really? We're going to end up with going against Durant in the first round. And you could end up with Brooklyn in any scenario, right? I mean, Brooklyn's down there. They could be the six. They could be the seven. They could be the two, you know, whatever, depending on where
they're
things...
They're not going to be the two. I guarantee
I'm sorry, not the two, but you know what I'm saying. They could fall in where if you're a top four seed, you could probably end up playing Brooklyn. So when I look at what the Cavs are, I think I wouldn't feel overly confident in any... If you look at any of the top 10 seeds in the East, there's not one team that I would say, oh, even if we're the number one seed, like if we went up against Atlanta, would you feel 100% confident that the Cavs were going to beat Atlanta in a 7-game series after what you saw from Trae Young last year in the playoffs? I wouldn't be. I would hope they would beat them.
If we played Boston, I feel confident. Although Boston's playing really good now.
Boston's won like 8 in a row.
I still feel confident.
Okay. Charlotte? Yeah, you'd probably feel pretty confident. But would Charlotte beating the Cavs be that stunning of an upset? Let's say the Cavs are the 2 seed and Charlotte's the 7. Would it be that stunning of an upset if Charlotte were to beat the Cavs in a 7-game series? I mean, it would be a mild upset, but I don't think it's would be completely ridiculous. So I think if you're the Cavs, you're looking at this year as found money. And we talked about it before. You're going to figure out whether or not LeVert and or Sexton are going to be a part of your long-term core over the next year and a half. And the fact of the matter is you have your best three players locked up for at least the next 3 years. Because Allen's extension, did it kick in this year or does it kick in?
I don't know. After I did see an interesting stat. I don't want us to get us down. We've already gone down the Cavs rabbit hole, Mike. But Jared Allen tonight has 100. Had four dunks. Got him to 144 dunks, Mike, on the season. The only player for the Cavs that have had more dunks than he had in a season was LeBron.
Right.
How many dunks do you think LeBron had in a season?
What's his high? His season high in dunks?
For the Cavs.
As a Cav?
As a Cav.
I would say, so Jared Allen, we're at what, game 55 right now about? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jared Allen has 144. I'd say LeBron probably had, I'll say 250.
145.
Wow.
So he's passing him tomorrow night.
Yeah, probably. I would say so.
Okay.
I would say so.
And that's since 97, 98. That's when they started keeping stats like that. Yeah, I guess they didn't keep. That's crazy, though, isn't it?
That is. But I guess Jared Allen's around the rim and, heck, he's shooting 70% from the floor. So those better be a lot of dunks. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to the next trade.
Okay.
Mavericks cash out on KP, Kristaps Porzingis. They gets traded with a second round pick. To protect the second round pick, which I don't know if I've ever heard of a protected second round pick, but protected second round pick to the Mavericks for Spencer Dinwiddie. So Spencer Dinwiddie gets the Mavericks and Davis Bertans. Someone made the joke, was this the first time that two Germans have ever been traded for one another? And I was like, I was like, that doesn't work. That's not right. But anyways, regardless. Thing is this, Mike, this trade, I guess Luka and KP really didn't like each other. I mean, I've kind of heard that, but I didn't realize it was to the level that they needed to trade him. But did you see the Tim Legler tweet? Tim Legler said, oh, they called Kristaps Porzingis a unicorn. Because of how different skills he is, or is it just because how infrequently you saw him on the floor? I mean, and that's a very good, that was a very good statement. I mean, when you think about it, how often he's absent. I don't know. Does this make the Mavericks a better team though? I don't know.
I think here's where you go. If you're Dallas. So I think, the reason why Dallas does this trade, I think there's a couple things that lead to this trade happening. One is, I think they had pretty much accepted the fact that Porzingis, even when he was at his best in Dallas, and he's had stretches where he's been very good and he's shown flashes of what he was and people thought he could be when he was still with the Knicks. But I think Dallas came to the realization that we are never, ever going to be able to depend on this guy to play four straight seven-game series in a playoff run. And if you have Luka, right, you have one of the best, whatever. He has obviously come on here in the last couple months after starting the season very slow. But I think most people would agree that Luka's a top five, at worst, a top 10 player in the NBA, and more likely a top five, especially when you consider his ball dominance and just the things that he can do and what he's done in the playoffs the last 2 years, even though he hasn't won, what he did to the Clippers, and we've talked about that before, that a team that is almost ideally equipped with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to deal with Luka better than just about any other team, and he still just absolutely torched them in the playoffs and couldn't quite get them over the hump. But nonetheless, if you're Dallas, you're looking at, we want to contend for championships for the next decade. And if our second best player, we have no idea game to game, moment to moment, year to year, whether this guy's going to be available. I think from that standpoint, you're looking at it as it's addition by subtraction, especially those two guys didn't get along. And the fact that Porzingis couldn't stay on the floor regardless of the positive things that he brought to the table when he was there. The fact that he wasn't available just made him expendable. And so any other team that's looking at that knows the same thing, right? So that he hasn't been able to stay on the floor. So what's his value? So what Dallas did is basically you bring back two guys who theoretical Spencer Dinwiddie, the Spencer Dinwiddie of pre-ACL tear in Brooklyn, was pretty good. He was a guy who you could run offense through. He was a guy who could handle the ball. He could be a secondary playmaker next to Luka. So sort of makes sense. But Dinwiddie hasn't been very good this year. By all accounts, it sounded like the Wizards couldn't wait to get rid of him. Guys in the locker room didn't like him or whatever. So you bring that in. And then Bertans, a guy who signed a huge contract, and since the day he signed it, hasn't been able to shoot the ball, which was supposedly his best skill. And both of those guys are on, I would say, based on their production to this point, pretty bad contracts. But you've basically split the Porzingis contract into two separate contracts that maybe make it more tradable. Is Dallas better today than they were last Wednesday? I don't think so. But are they that much worse? Probably not. It's interesting, though, that they had been playing better, and that I know Porzingis missed the last five games before the trading deadline, but Dallas was starting to turn around. Most of that clearly rests on the shoulders of Luka's improvement and how well he's been playing for the last month or two. And ultimately, that's what's going to carry you as far as you're going to go if you're Dallas. But I think what it does do is it gives Dallas maybe 10%, 20% more flexibility to be able to potentially do something else down the road and be able to trade one of these contracts or open up cap space. And if you get a good version of Dinwiddie and Bertans, who should theoretically get better looks with Luka feeding him the ball, maybe it ends up being that these guys are productive players that can help you. But on paper, this looks really bad. And it certainly doesn't move the needle where you take Dallas from, oh, they were an interesting, frisky team that could win a round or two. You're certainly not looking at them as title contenders as a result of this. And then on the Washington side of it, I mean, what are the Wizards doing at all in any way, shape, or form? Beal's out for the season.
Poor Joe House, Mike.
Well, you take a flyer on Porzingis, and if you're Washington, it's just that you're just out in the woods somewhere wandering around with having no idea what you're doing. So whatever, take Porzingis. Maybe it works out. Maybe he stays healthy and he teams with Beal. Maybe you just let Beal, whatever. You don't re-sign Beal. I have no idea what Washington's going to do, but this trade, I'd say it's one that I'm not sure it's a winner for either team.
Yeah. Really, Mike, when you look at most of these trades that happened yesterday, I don't know. Nothing really sticks out as far as, like, I think the next one that we're going to talk about here, like the Derek White to the Celtics, I mean, he's definitely better than Josh Richardson and Romeo Langford. Now, is he that big of a difference? I mean, he played really well tonight, Mike. Sure looked good tonight in the minutes he played. So the Celtics made two trades. They traded Derek White for Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, and the first round pick, which is top four protected, which that they're not going to have a top four pick, and the right to swap 2028 first round picks. The Celtics also reacquired Daniel Theis for Schroeder, Fernando, and Freedom. So we got two trades for the Celtics. They had five roster spots open after these trades, so they had to make some pickups, and I guess Luke Kornet was picked up by them, and I can't remember.
Former Cavalier.
Former Cav this season. Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't share insider trading tips on the Cavs. Anyways, does this make the Celtics better? Yes, no, yes, maybe?
I think it's a maybe. Josh Richardson's been playing well. Derek White's probably a better offensive player a little bit more playmaking, which if you think about what the criticism of the Celtics has been, it's that they don't have a guy that really is a good playmaker. When you think about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart, none of those guys are necessarily known for their ability to make their teammates better. Now, Derek White is not a distributor on the level of a Chris Paul, but he's certainly a better playmaker than the guys that they have currently. So I guess it's an upgrade. Does it move the needle where all of a sudden you're like, ooh, Boston, they could get out of the East? No. Daniel Tice, obviously, whatever. So they cut bait on Schroeder and Schroeder. Sorry, I went with your pronunciation tonight.
Yeah, listen, you've been hearing me so much.
I know. I just had to go with it. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, whatever. This trade, I guess if you're a Celtics fan, it makes the Celtics marginally better. But I still think it ultimately, the Celtics' destiny comes down to how good can Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown be and how well can they play together. And who knows? Maybe they're putting it together. Maybe they're figuring it out. An 8-game winning streak says, hey, there's something going right there. And we'll see. We'll see if they can continue it.
All right. Next trade. Bucks trade involved in a trade. There's lots of stuff going on here. All right. The Kings acquire Dante DiVincenzo, Josh Jackson, Trey Lyles, and the draft rights to David Michinu. I'm guessing he doesn't play over here. That's why it's the draft rights. The Pistons acquired Marvin Bagley III. The Clippers acquired Rodney Hood, Semi Ojeleye, and the draft rights to Vanja Mira. Who cares? Because I don't know how to say your name. And then the Bucks acquired Serge Ibaka, either the Warriors or Cavaliers 2023 second round pick, whichever is less favorable from the Pistons. The Kings 2024 second round pick and cash. Oof. So let's just start with the Pistons. They got Marvin Bagley Jr. Whatever. I mean, theoretically, maybe next year this could turn into something with, but I don't know. I mean, but Bagley hasn't proven that he's anything. So
Bagley's. Here's what I'm going to remember Marvin Bagley's career for. I can guarantee it. I'm going to remember the line from Hallelujah. The baffling Kings took Bagley over Luka. So that's the line that I will continue to remember Marvin Bagley's career by, unless something takes a huge turn. If you're the Pistons, why not? Former second pick in the draft. You got a young team. You bring him in. Maybe you can figure out a way to play him minutes. Is he a four? Is he a five? Can he defend anyone? Can you develop and get him to the point where he can shoot some threes and maybe be a guy that can spread the floor? None of those things have really happened in Sacramento. Sacramento's a mess. So those are the guys that you always want to take a flyer on. So you don't give up very much, and you end up bringing in a guy who clearly has a pedigree, has talent, but has been in a weird, weird situation. Maybe it'll never come together for Marvin Bagley, but why not? Why not take the risk if you're the Pistons? You're not going anywhere. You're not giving up any major assets. So kudos to the Pistons for at least giving that a try.
Yep. All right, so then we look at, from the Clippers' perspective, getting Rodney Hood, Semi Ojeleye.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah, okay. Bucks acquiring Serge Ibaka, Mike.
It's a good move for the Bucks, right? Serge, at this point in his career, what is Serge Ibaka? I'm not sure, but theoretical, hypothetical, Serge Ibaka with the unknown of whether Brooke Lopez is going to be able to come back. The Bucks took an in-season look at Boogie and decided we don't want to go that direction. So now you're taking a look at Serge. He's been playing well of late. He's obviously been a guy over the last couple of years that has been injured off and on. So who knows whether or not he's able to stay healthy. But if he's healthy, he's a guy who can shoot threes. He's a guy who can protect the rim. He's a guy who fits in kind of with what Milwaukee likes to do on both ends of the floor. So it gives them a little bit of insurance if Brooke Lopez doesn't come back. So I like the move for Milwaukee. You give up DiVincenzo, who basically was splitting time. You had three guys at that position, right, for the Bucks. You had Connaughton, they added Grayson Allen, and then you have DiVincenzo. Well, I don't know if you saw, but Pat Connaughton fractured a finger, I think, last night. And so they don't know how long he's going to be out. So right away, immediately, DiVincenzo would have moved up a little bit in their rotation.
Yeah,
I think
like everyone that's saying, oh, the Bucks stole Serge Ibaka. I don't think the Bucks stole them. Like, they gave stuff up.
DiVincenzo is a real
player. I think he's not some scrap heap. Like, he's not Kevin Pangos.
Right. Had he not gotten hurt last year, and look, you can say the Bucks won the title without him, which they did, but DiVincenzo was a starter last year before he went out with injury, and the Bucks figured out a way to play without him. But it's not like he's just a toss away. I don't know how good Dante DiVincenzo can be if you put him into a major role and you want to build something real. I don't know if he can be the third best player on a really good team. I don't know if he's at that level, but he's certainly a valuable piece that the Bucks gave up, that especially now, which, let's say this injury happened in the playoffs and Connaughton goes down, now you're basically down to the only guy you have to play in that spot is Grayson Allen. So you're a little less flexible. Whereas a week ago, you had three guys at that spot. Now you're down to one until Connaughton comes back if you're Milwaukee. So it's not a trade without risk, but Ibaka fills a need because we don't know about Brook Lopez and his back and whether or not he'll be able to come back. So I don't mind this trade. I think this trade all the way around for everybody involved is fine. It doesn't move the needle. It's not super exciting, but I don't think any team got fleeced, and I don't think any team came out like, woohoo, man, we stole whoever. I think there's good pieces going back and forth all over the place, although I'm not sure that any of those pieces really, really move the needle.
Yeah. The Hornets traded for Montrezl Harrell, Ish Smith, and Vernon Carey went to the Wizards. Ish Smith, that poor guy just got away from the Wizards. Signed a deal with the Hornets
this back.
Year. He's probably like, dang it. Back in Washington.
Hopefully he liked living in D.C. at least.
So he's been in the league since 2010. I was like, I swear he's played. He's been in the league since 2010. Do you want to guess how many teams Ish Smith has played for? And I will count. I will count repeat teams.
I'll say 9.
He's been on 15 different teams.
All right. Well, there you go.
He's here's his Rockets, Grizzlies, Warriors, Magic, Bucks, Suns, Thunder, 76ers, Pelicans, 76ers again, Pistons, Wizards, Hornets, Pistons, or Wizards again. That's crazy.
He's a journeyman, man. Come on, he's a journeyman.
Hey, he's made some money for sure. He's made some money. Anyways, I don't think this does anything for either team, right? The Wizards are just Montrezl Harrell. We know what he is in the playoffs. He's not a huge player in the.
He sort of helps the Hornets, right? In theory, they didn't have. You don't have to play Mason Plumlee 38 minutes a game at center. He gives you a little bit more flexibility. Is he a guy who's going to push the Hornets into a different tier as a playoff contender? No.
No.
But again, did you give up much to get him? No.
Vernon Carey's pretty solid, Mike.
Vernon Carey was a highly ranked high school player, and I guess he's made it to the NBA. But yeah, he's not going to be having a huge impact on the Washington Wizards' one loss record for the rest of the season. So I don't mind it for Charlotte. They needed a center. Is Harrell a huge upgrade and going to make a huge difference in their team? No, but he's proven himself to be a competent NBA player and good for the Hornets. I mean, they're marginally better as a result of this, but not in any way that's significant when it comes to the playoffs.
Yep. Okay. All right. Raptors traded for Thad Young, Drew Eubanks, and either the Pistons or Bulls second round pick. For Goran Dragic, and the Raptors' first round pick, it's top 14 protected. Dragic's reportedly going to get bought out. I don't know if that's happened yet or not. And probably going to end up with the Bucks, I would guess, based on reports. It sounds like the Bucks are the leading candidate to get him. The Bucks or the Heat. He can go back to the Heat. I don't know. Would he go back to the Heat? I don't know.
There's a lot of talk that, I mean, at least prior to this, I haven't read anything recently, but it sounded like. Initially, people thought maybe he was going to go to Dallas. to play with Luka, but I have not heard that since this trade went down. Look, bottom line here is Thaddeus Young is kind of the long 6'8 athletic guy that Toronto seems to have cornered the market on. So that's a good pickup for Toronto. And just like we talked about with the Harden-Simmons trade, Dragic wasn't playing for the Raptors, and you turned him into a guy who probably is going to play for your team. And so when you can do that, seems like a pretty good trade for Toronto. I guess the Spurs, you get that first-round pick if somebody gets injured here in the second half of the season, and the Raptors, who knows? It's going to be borderline whether or not that pick conveys this year. I don't know if it turns into something. If it doesn't, whatever. If the Raptors are in the top 14 and the Spurs don't get that pick, does it roll over to 2023? Does it eventually become two second rounders? Who knows? But for the Raptors, in the short term, picking up Thad Young, who's been a good veteran on the last couple teams that he's been on, obviously wasn't playing with the Spurs, but he definitely helped the Bulls in years past. And he's a guy who probably is going to get minutes for Toronto, and he fits what they're trying to do from a defensive standpoint and from an athletic standpoint. So seems like at least a solid pickup by the Raptors.
All right. Yep. And then the Suns reacquired Torrey Craig, and they acquired Aaron Holiday. It's two separate trades. Pacers got Jalen Smith and the Suns second round pick. Obviously Torrey Craig was huge for them last year. This is a huge pickup. I think this is a good move for them. They're already the best team in the NBA, and now they just got another player that they can put in their rotation, and he knows the system. And they also got the Aaron Holiday from the Wizards. I don't know how much that trade helps them. I think Torrey Craig is the bigger portion of this, just because he knows the system. He's going to, they don't have to even worry about reteaching everything. I mean, obviously there's going to be little nuances that are going to be different, but he already knows how to play with these guys. So I think that's a good pickup for the Suns. Your take?
Yeah, I think both of those guys, Torrey Craig in the right situation, big wing, can defend guys at that position. So you can never have enough wing defenders, and you pick up Torrey Craig for a guy in Jalen Smith that maybe you made a mistake in not offering him his rookie extension or not, picking up his option for that third year. But whatever, they clearly either didn't want to play him, didn't like him, didn't want to spend the money to go into the luxury tax to keep Jalen Smith. So you're getting rid of a guy that clearly you didn't want as part of your future. And then Aaron Holiday is a guy who gives him some depth at guard. So if you get a Chris Paul injury or you get a campaign injury, now you got Aaron Holiday on the roster and another guy that can, he's serviceable. He's a functional NBA player that you can put out on the court, and he's not going to kill you. So two good pickups for the Suns just to add depth to what's already been the best team in the league since the first day of the season.
All right. Last trade that actually happened, Mike, your boy, Bol Bol traded, PJ Dozier traded. I have to say, Mike, the two shots tweet was the tweet of the day yesterday. But this, the tweet that the Celt Magic put out, did you see the tweet that they put out?
I did not.
They did like a welcome Bol Bol, welcome PJ Dozier, and then they did welcome cash considerations, and they put up a pile of cash sitting on a table. I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty good.
The Celtics got a second round pick for this. This was to get below the luxury tax line, which is why this trade was why they got had the five roster spots open. I forgot to throw this trade in with the Celtics. We don't have to spend any time on that. Sorry, that's a nothing. I just wanted to say the magic tweet. With the cash considerations.
All I can say on this trade is any team that acquires Bol Bol, that's a win for that trade. They won that trade.
Well, he's been traded like four times now this season. So
I know, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know. Do we want to talk at all about, I guess, the big teams that didn't make any moves, the Lakers? Do we want to talk about that at all? Or
No.
Did you see the thing that Russell Westbrook said today?
No.
He said that his back is bothering him, and the reason his back is bothering him is he's not used to being sitting for as long as stretches as he's been sitting.
that team was funny. That team's a mess.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, that seems
I guess, and LeBron and Davis aren't happy with that there were no moves made, supposedly.
Yeah, so there's no moves to be made. I mean, there are no moves that could make a difference for the Lakers. I mean, there's nothing out there. I mean, because the move is you got to get rid of Westbrook, and in doing that, nobody wants that contract. And really, the only thing that you heard mentioned was you could flip him for John Wall. Well, whoopee. I mean, whatever John Wall is today, he's certainly not the John Wall of 7 or 8 years ago. So does that make the Lakers better? Does that make them championship contenders? No. Theoretically, you have LeBron and Anthony Davis, and so you can make the argument that if those two guys are at their best, there aren't many duos better than that in the league, but the rest of this roster has been such a dumpster fire that I just don't see. Nothing's going to change. The Lakers are going to be in the play-in, and that still doesn't mean I would want to play them. I would not want to play them in a first-round series if I was one of the teams in the West. When you have LeBron, you have AD, and I don't think they can win 4 playoff rounds, but they could make things awfully scary just because of those two guys if they play at the level that they're capable of playing at. But the team's going nowhere. They're not constituted to be a team that can really legitimately contend for a title and win 4 rounds of playoff basketball. There's no way.
Yep. All right, Mike. I think we've covered it all. It's 2 a.m. right now. I think we've covered it all. I did not prepare any dad jokes tonight.
I did not either.
So we're gonna forego the dad jokes. We'll be back on Tuesday, Mike, and we'll be discussing. Basically, I don't know. Are there any NBA games on Wednesday next week? I feel like there probably are. Are there NBA games next Wednesday? Yeah, there's NBA games. Oh, there's NBA games Wednesday and Thursday next week. That's bizarre that they're playing games Wednesday and Thursday, and then they have the All-Star game stuff starting right on Friday. So there's theoretical players that are going to be playing back to back. That's bizarre. I don't know why they do that.
It's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it, especially not at 2 a.m.
And there's teams that play back to back Wednesday, Thursday, so you could theoretically have a guy that's going to play 3 straight days if they're playing in the rookie game too.
There you go.
I don't know if I like that. Anyways, sorry.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up there. We have a full regular episode coming up with David Thorpe, which I think is going to go up on Monday. Fascinating guy, and a lot of good things in there for coaches, for parents, and it's just a really, really interesting episode. So please, please, when that comes out on Monday, check that out. And we appreciate you listening to our trade deadline special, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.